All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Friday, December 2nd. I'm Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
There he is, and we are going to break down every game on the NFL schedule for this week, talk about the DFS implications that you can kind of take into consideration when looking at really just the NFL landscape as a whole. If you want a look into our value play podcast, we posted that yesterday, so you can head over where we break down sort of position by position some of the guys that we're looking to target for cash games. Today we'll go a little bit deeper dive on some of the just really the rest of the games on the slate, nodding to the players that we mentioned yesterday. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started or continue winning on FanDuel or DraftKings. You can head over to the site, grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system that's powered by Lineup Lab that gives you optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. It's free for 3 days and then just $29.95 a month after that. Also includes our NBA projections as well. So go over, think it's a great deal, and you will not be unhappy. Is that too many negatives? You'll be happy, so there you go. don't want to like double negative myself to death. All right, dude.
Start, man. I'm excited for today's podcast.
Yeah, me too. Okay, so we are going to start with, well, so it's funny about these games, but let's start with the Ravens and the Dolphins. Not exactly where you want to usually jump off to get like people really pumped for an NFL weekend, yeah. But that's just, you know, we go sort of by an arbitrary list, and this is the first one on the list. Anything really standing out to you here? Ravens sort of been spreading the ball around a little bit more lately. Dolphins, I think, are still without some of their offensive line that they struggled with last week. Anything kind of jump out to you for this game?
I mean, just saying no would be kind of boring, I guess, right? But I think kind of no. I mean, I don't think you can play Jay Ajayi in this one. He's like really the only fantasy relevant guy that I see on a week to week basis from this. And you know, Baltimore's just allowed the fewest overall running yards this season. That's not where you want to be for a guy who already coming off a not so great week in a new reality with a banged up offensive line. So, given that he's sort of off the table, after that you're just looking at speculative wide receivers. You know, the Dolphins have come out and said that Devontae Parker's probably not going to play this week, so that would open up more looks for guys like Kenny Stills, maybe Jarvis Landry. Again, this is just not an exceptional matchup, and it's not like, I mean, Stills is very cheap. I could see Stills actually being a pretty interesting play just in terms of the really speculative big tournament variety, but other than that, I'm pretty uninspired here.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see Landry return to like that double-digit target guy that he had been near the beginning of the season. It just really hasn't happened for them.
There's just no evidence that that's their plan at all. I mean,
right. And it's really good. It really went the way of the dinosaur when they were able to establish some running game behind Ajayi. So
right.
I'm willing to kind of take some of the a guy like Landry and Stills, and they're not safe, but Parker was eating up a lot of those targets. And if he's gone, it does seem like target share gets spread out a little bit more. And if they're playing from behind, but you put it well, Baltimore's just a very, very good defense. And it's just hard to target guys against good defenses. Even if you think their opportunity is greatly increased, you're still playing against a good team. Like these guys aren't, it's not like Landry and Stills are like some otherworldly wide receivers. They're just not. So I like
for sure. And how many of those targets are realistically going to get redistributed to Stills and Landry specifically? You know, one of the things we see all the time, particularly on not so great teams, is it's not easy just to slot one guy in and have him take over all the target share.
Right.
Oftentimes it gets spread out one or two targets to a bunch of guys you've never heard of. And all of a sudden you think like, hey, we're going to spread out seven targets among these two guys. And in reality, you're spreading like three targets among those two guys. And that's just not a needle mover in a tough matchup.
Yeah, and the other guy too, I mean, you can maybe take a flyer on a guy like Deion Sims. He was really just a non-commodity leading up to the last couple weeks. But the last couple weeks, three catches, four catches, did catch a touchdown pass last week. He's basically free. Not a guy that I would feel comfortable going in cash games at all, but tight end is just traditionally, or has been this season, just the very most difficult position to fill. So if you want to just kind of take flyers on some of these cheap guys, hope they can get a random kind of luck box red zone look, then I'm all for it. But he's not a guy that just like kind of, he's not jumping out as like toward the top of the value list. But I don't know, if there's targets to go around, he could show up there. Anything on the Baltimore side of the ball, I mean, they really haven't been able to run the ball very well this year. They will kind of spread it to guys like Smith, but I'm just not sure if there's anything here for us.
No, there's not. It's all just a straight up speculative big tournament situation.
Yeah, I mean, guys like Terrence West, like I said, has every once in a while seen that double digit carry. The problem is he sucks. So he will see. All right, the next game on the list is the Niners and the Bears. This game, actually, the line has swung pretty significantly here. It started at -2.5 for the Bears. and is now -1 for the Niners. I don't know if that was people overvaluing what they thought the Bears were to start with Barkley or undervaluing the Niners. I mean, do you have any guess?
Vegas just maybe missed on that. I think Vegas looked at that and thought people would more overrate Barkley's performance from last week and view him as sort of a savior. And it just turned out that people aren't so easily fooled, I guess. I mean, it is crazy to think, like, if you're just on the Bears, right, and you're an underdog to this 49ers team that's been just incredibly horrible all season long, I guess, like, you know, it's actually two scenarios of who do you trust more or less, right? Like this Kaepernick quote-unquote resurgence or this Matt Barkley thing. I mean, the Niners, they have a point differential of -116 this year. That's right. Second worst in the NFL to the Browns. So these are two terrible teams, but some fun fantasy implications.
Yeah, we talked about a couple guys yesterday here. We did talk about Barkley a little bit. He was fine enough considering his price. And like you said, the Niners are just a very bad defense. I think for, you know, 6,000 on FanDuel, that you can definitely take a look at a guy like him. I mean, we talked about Jordan Howard. Jordan Howard is a guy that will kind of show up in really no matter what the Bears are doing, whether they're playing from behind or ahead. He has been getting looks. We talked about him. We did mention Vance McDonald, sort of just as a guy that's emerged under Kaepernick. What about Kaepernick, though? Like, the Bears defense isn't in any great shakes either. They are projected for, I mean, their implied total has gone up. He's been pretty good lately.
It was phenomenal last week. I mean, the thing about Kaepernick, yeah, like if he's just feels like he's playing for a job and he's going to run 8 or 10 times a game, that's an excellent sign for him. I mean, last week he put up 35 fantasy points, and that was because he was a running back and a quarterback. I mean, he had 296 yards and 3 touchdowns and 110 rushing yards. Like, that's, you know, it's going to be hard for a lot of anyone to put up production like that unless you can do both of those things. And he's kind of expensive now. You know, he did it last week. You wouldn't have been thrilled with his New England game, and, you know, you would have been happy with his Arizona or New Orleans game. So, yeah, I think you can definitely consider Kaepernick. I mean, I don't think that he'll be my, like, personal go-to guy for cash games, but I don't think he's off the table by any stretch.
Yeah, I think people will kind of go there. I mean, it's so funny because he's now the same price, at least on FanDuel. He's the same price as Russell Wilson. He's more expensive than Cam Newton. So, it's just, I never thought we'd get there on a guy like Kaepernick, but like you said, it's really based on those rushing yards. It's so much. I mean, 113 rushing yards, that's, no quarterback does that. No quarterback is really a favorite to get anywhere close. Not even a favorite. No quarterback's favorite to get halfway there. So the fact that he just has that piece of his game, it just really raises his floor. So I can see people. I'm not sure I'm going to go there because I think the price is just still too high, and I think the rushing, that's just the very top end of his rushing, but I definitely can see it. Anyone else in this game we haven't considered? Anything like in the Bears wide receiver front? Jeffrey is still out. I'm not sure if Barkley has has pinpointed who he really wants to pass to, but, I mean, can you play anyone even from, like, tournament upside for the Bears?
Yeah, I think Marcus Wilson is a very interesting option here. He didn't really, you know, make an appearance this season until last game, but getting out there for 8 receptions and 125 yards and a touch is excellent production, obviously. We've seen this sort of precedent in the past where second team guys come in with other second team guys and just keep throwing them the ball because that's who they feel comfortable with. And we've seen Wilson be good in the past. I mean, he was a guy who put up some big performances last year on minimum prices too. So I think he's definitely an interesting speculative play, and I wouldn't be surprised if the industry kind of moved towards favoring him given the, you know, pretty uncertain nature of the Chicago wide receiving team right now.
The next game is the Lions and the Saints. Saints started at -4, now up to -6. Most of it coming down off the Lions side. The Saints are right around 30 implied points, which I believe is the highest of the week. And if it's not, it's either second highest, but I'm pretty sure it's the highest. A guy like Breeze, we have a decent amount of quarterbacks that we like. Our system does tend to favor running quarterbacks a little bit more just because those points are, it's easier to get those points than it is to accrue them through the air. But Breeze has been really, really good, and the Saints are expected to put up points again. They're playing at home. What are your thoughts on Breeze here? Because I can see people wanting to play him sort of in what it's probably considered to be a pretty good matchup.
Yeah, I don't mind playing Breeze today. I mean, he's...
Well, you can't play him today, buddy. Today's Friday.
I can play him whenever I want to play him, so point. I don't want to be told what I can and cannot do. John Locke lost.
Great reference.
Yeah, thanks. But I do think, I mean, Breeze presents, you know, a level of safety that's pretty not unprecedented. I mean, we have guys who have gone on streaks like Breeze has before. But yeah, you know, he's going to be pretty solidly in that 20 to 25 fantasy point range, just because he's the whole plan on offense. I mean, Hightower and Ingram have definitely played a more prominent role recently, but I think that's been more of a game script related thing. When the Saints are behind, Breeze is the plan. And when they're slightly ahead, Breeze is the plan. So I think he's plenty safe on these prices. It's just a question of, is he the exact guy you want since you only play one quarterback? And that's where I'm not so sure.
Yeah, he's really expensive too. I mean, he's 90 on FanDuel, he's 9,300. That is 700 more than the next closest guy. So, you know, not quite 10%, but that's a pretty significant. And then, you know, 800 more than Brady. And then there's really a pretty steep drop off. So it's just really probably a price thing on him. He's just so expensive. And when you only pass, you basically do need to have everything go correct in terms of passing touchdowns. Like, he needs to throw for all the touchdowns. Not all of them, but he needs to get, I mean, two touchdowns at least in this game, I would say, and then probably needs to probably hit three. So that's my only concern. When you just need – when he's never going to run and – you're relying on all of the times getting into the end zone through the air. That's my only concern. And it's really just a price thing. It has nothing to do with how good he's been. He's been excellent this season. On the Detroit side of the ball, they should be playing catch up most of this game. You know, they have a running back in Riddick who is not your traditional running back, but man, the guy gets a lot of receptions and he will be on the field too if they're trying to play catch up. What do you think about the receiving core plus Riddick for the guy, for the Lions?
Yeah, I guess, you know, from week to week, I tend to be a little bit less high on Riddick than you, I think. I mean, he definitely has some of those huge target games. He's really only turned that into like three good fantasy performances right. All season long. And those were great, by the way. Like, if you happen to catch him against Houston, Philly, or Indianapolis, you were thrilled with what he pulled out for you. But for those three games, he's got six games where he's horrendous. Like, you know, essentially exactly 8 points in all in five of those and 12 in another one against Jacksonville. But he's not a guy that just winds up coming into my radar occasionally on DraftKings, not really on any other sites like FanDuel or Fantasy Factor or any of those. and then in terms of the wide receiver core, I mean, I think Golden Tate is increasingly both interesting and frustrating. I mean, the price on FanDuel is now less than 6,000, but we've seen his target share head back in the wrong direction in the last 2 weeks with Minnesota and Jacksonville. So I'm not sure totally what to make of him.
Yeah, I actually don't mind going back his way this week. If I can see a return to the targets, Minnesota is a very, very bad matchup for him. And Jacksonville's actually been above average against the pass, all things considered this season. New Orleans is 25th against the pass. They've struggled a little bit with players in the slot. So I do like this. I can see Tate kind of having a target resurgence in a game like this, especially because you have to figure they're going to be playing from behind. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's safe enough to do for cash games, but I can see us kind of – I wouldn't be surprised to stare at the end of the week and see him having just kind of an excellent game. So him, I could see the same thing for Ebron. I just don't feel safe about it. But guys, you know, we had targeted a lot of guys early on in the season against New Orleans. They're still not a very good pass defense. I'm just wondering sometimes if we get caught too much in the what have you done for me lately thing with a guy like Tate, and that's where I don't want to fall victim to it, but I also don't know exactly sometimes how to totally properly evaluate it.
Yeah, I think that's a fair take on it. And another guy actually who I think it's worth at least keeping on your radar for big tournaments is Anquan Boldin. He's just 5,000 on FanDuel, and it's interesting with the Lions. Like, he's their de facto red zone guy, even though he doesn't play as many snaps as maybe you'd like, or rather he gets the snaps. He doesn't get the target share that maybe you would like normally, but in the last 2 weeks, he's top 20% target share, punched in another touchdown. He's up to 6 touchdowns on the year, which I think a lot of people might find surprising. So, you know, at just 5,000, you could certainly do a lot worse. And, you know, if he randomly punches 2 touchdowns in instead of 1, all of a sudden you're just over the moon with the performance.
What about the Saints receiver core? I mean, Cooks is coming off a very frustrating week. I don't think he did anything last week. I need to look. I know he was bad no matter what, but I mean, seeing a bounce back for a guy like him, maybe, no receptions last week for Cooks. A guy like Michael Thomas has been pretty decent target guy this season. Where do you see, I mean, the Saints are expected to put up points, so it's feel weird to not play any of them, but do they kind of just spread the ball out too much?
Yeah, I think so. I think really the only guy you're considering earnestly for cash games is Thomas. I think after that, then you're just, you know, just throwing darts at a dartboard, a chalkboard.
Some I wouldn't throw them at a chalkboard, and yeah.
I would throw them at a chalkboard, okay. Personally, just because how hysterical that would be. But otherwise, yeah, there's no one you can trust there.
Yeah, that's always the problem with the Saints is they're a great offense, but they're great because they have just have a lot of guys that do well. And I know that's sort of a cop-out, but it really kind of ends up being the problem with him. I do like Thomas, though. He is sort of emerging, and he's actually a nice red zone target for them, too, and that does help just in the down-and-close situations, whereas Cooks doesn't really have that. And look, a 0.0 game for Cooks is not where you want to be with your wide receivers. And I know people were frustrated on that last week, but it just doesn't happen to really, really good receivers who are big parts of their offense, even if he has had big games in the past. So I would be concerned there. The next game is the Eagles and the Bengals. I mean, talk me into something here. The Bengals, I guess, are still with that AJ Green, so there's some targets to go around. A guy like Jeremy Hill. I mean, is there anything here?
I think there is something here. One guy I'm keying in on a little bit this week is Tyler Boyd. He goes up and touches 16% target share, had 62 receiving yards and 5 catches in a really tough matchup with Baltimore. You have to think that, you know, while Philly's not an excellent matchup, it can't be much worse than the Baltimore matchup. So while it's a shame, because if this was a good matchup, I would be slam dunking him into my lineups. But I think he's at least a guy who's going to have considerable upside, given both the opportunity and the talent level there. And then the other guy I think some people will talk themselves into is Tyler Eifert. I'm not sure this is really the week you want to do it. Again, if this were a better matchup, I'd be a lot more enthusiastic. But like Boyd, 17% target share, also had the touchdown. He's a well-known red zone target at this point, already 2 touchdowns in essentially 4 full games of work. So yeah, both those guys I think are at least on the consider list.
Yeah, Philly's a good defense, so it does get a little dicey when you play yep. teams against good defenses, especially teams like the Bengals who don't have just clear-cut guys with Green out. You know, Cincinnati going the other way, not that great of a defense, a little bit below average all things considered, but Philly's just made a point this year to just have you never know who's going to do anything for their team. Like the running back situation is just totally variable on a week-to-week basis. And Jordan Matthews at times has shown that he's a target guy and then kind of disappeared. Wentz is just kind of a non-DFS factor for me, just the way that Philly plays. Does everything kind of just fall into the middle or below for the Eagles for you?
I think so. You know, they're not a good enough offense to basically key in on anyone when they're spreading things out this much. And so they're all just speculative plays for me.
All right, Houston goes into Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers, we talked at length about yesterday. I don't think we need to go there again. He's just not a totally clear-cut cash game play, but still very, very high in terms of just what kind of floor he has. Houston is just a mess. I don't really know what there's
nothing to do there.
No, I just think you can totally avoid it. Green Bay's a decent defense. They're big-time underdogs, and it's not like Osweiler. It's not like he's not even a guy that necessarily you want to even play from behind. He just stinks. So that game is just, at least for Houston, is total avoid for me. What about the Green Bay wide receivers slash a guy like James Starks? They are expected to be putting up points. Is Rodgers just kind of a standalone option for you for Green Bay, or do you like stacking him with any of these other guys?
I think Starks is a more interesting option than I thought he would be going into last week, but given that he had 5 catches and 17 rushes, that's a lot of opportunity. And at just 5,800, he's definitely a guy you can look at and say, you know, well, this is the cheap guy who's going to make all the rest of the pieces fall into place. Houston, you know, kind of a league average rushing defense, so you're not losing too much there. The real question is going to be like, you know, is this a week where you really want to spend down at running back, or is it a week where you want to spend up? And I suspect that we'll wind up going more in the spend up category and that'll leave Starks on the outside looking in. But yeah, I think he's an interesting option for sure.
Yeah, Starks' issue has always been that he's just not very good.
That is an issue. Yeah.
Right. Like he's a guy that's had plenty of opportunity in the past. You know, when Eddie Lacy's gone down and they've sort of made him the running back one. And he just isn't good. And there's a reason you play behind Eddie Lacy, and there's a reason you go out and sign guys like Christian Michael off the waiver wire, because I think they know that. I mean, yeah, he got 17 carries last week, 2.5 rushing yards. I mean, Eagles are a good defense, so take that for what it's worth. He did catch the touchdown the week before against the Redskins. The opportunity should be there, but he's just one of those guys that's not – he's just not good. So
I hope he never bumps into you in a dark alley.
I mean, he would obviously just like break
a very nice person, but he would probably say, I really didn't appreciate what you said about me on the podcast.
He, like all NFL players, would obviously just snap me into, and that includes the punters and the kickers. So
it really is true.
What about the Green Bay wide receivers at all? Nelson, Cobb, Montgomery's kind of disappeared over the last couple weeks, though they say they want to get him more involved. What do you think there?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, I think on the tier two guys, it's kind of a tragedy, the common situation, just too many guys to really want to key in on anyone in particular. But I do think Jordy Nelson is kind of rounding back into form as a wide receiver one. I mean, 8 receptions again last week, back up to 19% target share after kind of disappearing against Washington. It's an erratic play. It's not one that you can look at and say, like, you just want to play him everywhere or anything like that. But that kind of potential, I mean, he's also got 9 touchdowns this year, too. So the combination of the red zone looks and, you know, what we've seen in the past, like he had the 18-target week against Tennessee, that kind of potential can't be ignored for your big tournament rotations. But is he where you're going to wind up in cash games? I'm not sure about that.
Next game on the list is the Chiefs and the Falcons. Falcons have been playing really well lately. We did talk about Julio Jones at length yesterday. We also talked about the Chiefs wide receiver and tight end combination of Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, which if Jeremy Maclin specifically was not going to play again, we really like the target share to go around there. I'm not sure you can get totally excited about the running back situation. Spencer Ware has just been kind of whatever, and plus they stand to play from behind this week with the Falcons 4.5 favorites. I'm interested in a guy, what your thoughts are on a guy like Taylor Gabriel. The reason specifically is last week he was great. He's been kind of a non-thing this season, but then all of us, I mean, well, he's been decent, don't get me wrong. So, but last week he goes out and scores 24 fantasy points for FanDuel scoring, 4 catches, 75 yards, but 2 touchdowns. He also had a rush for 27 yards. Do you think this is a guy that people will look at that recent performance on him? It was great, and he was like almost like a minimum guy, and he was awesome. And they'll kind of like think like they'll transpose that performance onto like what he can be expected to do going forward. And like, do you think that's correct or a mistake?
Well, I think it's an incredible mistake, as you can probably guess. Sure. I mean, he does do a little bit of everything. You know, the rushing yards, he has a rushing touchdown sprinkled in there. But I think people are going to look and they're going to see, you know, the 4 touchdowns. Somebody out there is going to say, Taylor Gabriel had 4 touchdowns in the last 4 weeks. And they're going to ignore the fact that in the last 4 weeks, he had 13 total catches. Like, he's just not a guy that can be relied upon. And while obviously you don't mind a guy who can break off 76 yard runs or anything like that, like, that's not bad. But I don't think the athleticism is matched up with the opportunity yet. A guy who plays 35 snaps, like, it's just not going to make my teams almost ever.
Yeah, and I think people will probably – I could see him being higher owned on DraftKings than he probably should be as, like, numbers are concerned, because what people don't always, you know, kind of factor appropriately is how people score touchdowns. And like you said, all of his touchdowns have been sort of catch and runs, and that's just not something you can sustain over the course of a season no matter what. Like, if you're getting the ball outside the 20 and kind of just making things happen – and don't get me wrong, his runs were great. Like, they were, you know, highlight reel kind of stuff.
Yeah, but not everyone can do that. And I think people justifiably look at him and they say, well, there are not many players in the NFL can take a ball and just run with it for 76 yards and score a touchdown. And I think that's true. And I think most of the time he gets tackled after like 4 yards or whatever, and he has 1 catch for 4 yards, and it's totally forgettable. So, he's just not a guy I'm going to play.
We did mention Julio Jones yesterday, as we still think he's in that elite class of wide receiver, and mostly because you can just get him at a slightly discount price over a guy like, you know, Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham Jr. or even Mike Evans in some cases. So yes, while the targets have kind of ticked down for him a little bit, so is the price. So I think you're still kind of in a buy territory with Julio Jones, and I think that we might be sort of contrarian when it comes to a guy like him, but Falcons are expected to put up points. The Broncos take on the Jaguars. Oh man, the Jaguars. It's just never going to get better for them with Blake Bortles, I don't think. They're doomed to be bad, I think, with him behind center. The Broncos, you know, Devontae Booker is still getting carries, though he's another guy that falls into that running back of, you know, the opportunity's there, but the talent maybe just isn't totally there. But he's cheap. What do you think about a guy like Booker?
Yeah, I don't think Booker is a terrible option. You know, again, it's always so hard just because the running back slot is so competitive. But yeah, I mean, the Broncos are favored to do some stuff here. He's got 24 carries in each of his last 2 games, sprinkling in a few receptions there. And that's a ton of opportunity for any running back, and particularly one for a team that's rates to be favored this week. So I don't fault anyone for playing Booker. He's very cheap for that kind of, just that kind of overall opportunity. But the big question is, you know, do they do enough in the passing game to really support a running game, even on that carries level? And I'm not convinced of that.
Yeah, the 48 carries the last 2 weeks is elite. No other way around it. But just nothing else about what he's done is even close to elite. And that just is a concern. At some point, if you're just a 3-yard per rush guy, you just, even if you're cheap, it's just really hard. Now, again, maybe he's been running bad. Maybe he breaks a tackle and now all of a sudden there's a 100-yard game on that kind of carry. And I can see him probably exceeding it. I would think that at 24 carries per game, what he's been doing is probably his floor. But I mean, without more evidence of the contrary, it's really hard to kind of trust it. What about guys like Sanders or Thomas in the passing game? They still see some targets, though. Neither of them are elite target guys at this point.
Yeah, I think that you kind of pointed to my issue with them. I mean, with bad quarterback play, it's really hard to sustain a wide receiver almost at any price. And that being said, like, we've seen some huge games out of Sanders. We've seen some solid games out of Thomas. So I don't blame anyone for keeping them on their radars, but not a direction I'm headed this week.
The Rams go into New England. New England is minus 13, by far the biggest favorite on the day. With that kind of spread heading into the game, even though the Rams are a very slow team, but man, 29 points for the Patriots on a team that's also spreading the ball around. Does that kind of increase your willingness to buy on a guy like LeGarrette Blount if you figure that, you know, they're going to be up and just kind of looking to get out of the game and go home?
I mean, yes, Blount being at 6,600 makes him pretty attractive, I think. We have seen kind of a tick down in his usage since all of the Patriots' weapons have come online, but he's definitely the definitive goal line target. You know, for whatever reason, the Patriots seem to trust him a lot more than past iterations of their running backs around the goal line, in that they're not just doing the short passing thing as much as they used to. And I think, you know, part of that's to protect Gronk's health. Part of that's because Edelman's been banged up and, you know, there are extenuating circumstances there that maybe aren't all in place. But yeah, 12 touchdowns on the season for a team that's a hugely favored and wants to grind out the game, he seems like a great option.
Our big problem with Brady over the last couple of weeks, I mean, before the last 2 weeks, was he was just throwing a lot less. Like, he'd been averaging sort of in the low 30s pass attempts per game. But in the last two games, 40 passes, and the last week, 50 passes. Does this point to maybe the Patriots returning to the short passing game as the new running game kind of idea that they have employed in years past? They hadn't really been doing it since he came back, but two closer-ish games against the Jets and the Niners has him throwing there. Do you think the volume is enough to sustain him as a cash game quarterback?
Well, I mean, it's always tough to be a cash game quarterback because you only get one of them. But yeah, I think so. You know, you hate to lose touchdowns. And like we saw against the Seahawks, he passed for 316 yards and was devastating to your cash game lineups because he just didn't get any of the touchdowns. And so that's not always where you want to be in a higher price tier. Like, you'd certainly prefer past iterations of Brady that would get all those touchdowns. But that being said, that game is kind of standing out as an outlier, given the rest of his resume since returning this season. 18 touchdowns and one interception is obviously just beyond elite. And, you know, especially with guys like Edelman back in there, Danny Amendola to a lesser degree, I think we could see him be cash game viable for sure.
And I think you also see the Patriots as a pretty chalky defense, mostly because the Rams are projected for the least amount of points this week at only 16. They're still continued to be awful. Didn't matter that they brought in Goff. They're just a bad team. So the Patriots aren't really that good of a defense, but whenever you get a team that's just where their opponent's projected for so few points, I just think you can make a pretty strong case to play the defense against them. Defense of special teams is a tough one to sort of evaluate on a week-to-week basis, and just one of the best ways to go about that is just to look who stands to score the least amount of points, and that is the Rams this week. Bills go in and play Oakland this week. Oakland's a slight favorite. They do pass a ton, though. They've been willing to run Latavius Murray a little bit more. You know, they've been kind of up and down about who their running back was going to be this season. And the last two of the last three games, he's run for 20 attempts and 19 attempts. Do you see him sort of establishing himself as just that lead back there against the Bills team? He will catch balls out of the backfield too, which does help him.
I mean, I think he's pretty well established as a lead back for that team when everything is healthy and he's feeling good. The big question is being the lead back on that team good enough to make you a fantasy viable running back? And that's the part I'm not so sure of, unfortunately.
What about the wide receiver core, the Cooper, Crabtree? You know, the Bills are not the fastest team in the world, and pace kind of does matter when you're looking at just projected amount of touches for a specific team. Cooper's a guy that we liked last week. He kind of disappeared, of course, even though he was in a good matchup. Like I said, Buffalo, actually, I take that back. Buffalo is below average against the pass this year, 19th, 25th against the run. The Raiders are expected to put up points here. Anything from the wide receiver core?
Yeah, I mean, the key with the wide receiver core in Oakland is just guessing the right ones, right? I mean, it seems like we haven't had a lot of weeks where Cooper and Crabtree have both given you great production, and so kind of really trying to break down the matchup and figure out which direction they're more likely to go is often the thing you want to try there. Cooper at 7,800, like, I'm not over the moon with playing him just given how erratic he's been. Like, he's just had so many weeks this season. I mean, four of his last five where he's just killed you on those prices. And right. and then 1 week where he helped you win a big tournament. So that's just kind of what you get from those guys who are the big-time downfield threats that don't convert a lot of their targets into catches. But when they do, they have the potential to go off. And, you know, Crabtree, for what he's worth, like, you know, he's definitely had some good performances, was solid against Carolina last week, but rarely spectacular. So I'm not thrilled about either, but I could see a case for either as well.
Shady McCoy had 19 carries last week, put up 103 yards against the Jaguars. He's a great yards per carry guy. It seems like the touches are going to be there. We'll catch balls out of the backfield. I don't know, but 8,400 feels like a lot for him, considering some of the other running back value, which we haven't gotten to, you know, we mentioned some other more expensive guys yesterday, but, you know, McCoy, is he a guy that even if Buffalo's kind of projects to play from behind, does he do enough catching balls out of the backfield that you don't so worry about the floor?
No, I'm not so worried about the floor on him by and large, because he's just such a big part of the plan. Like, Buffalo just would love to never pass the ball once. Like, if they could play a game, like if the owners came together and were like, what do you think for next season? We try no passing. I think Buffalo would vote yes on that. So I think McCoy's ceiling is higher than a lot of run first running backs. That said, like, again, there's just so many excellent options at running back this week that it's hard for me to personally picture sticking McCoy in there into my cash games. But yeah, I think it's a good enough matchup to be where if there weren't a lot of other options, like if it were a really short slate and, like, say Bell and Johnson weren't there and right. I wanted to anchor my high end running back spot, I would be happy to play him.
Yeah, Oakland 27th in the league against the run this year in DVOA. So they do have problems there. You know, Buffalo for, you know, something around 23 projected points, it's kind of at the high end for them. So I'm sort of encouraged from them, you know, overall on offense, but like you said, the price on him, he just doesn't stand out enough over some of these other big money plays that he just doesn't strike me as totally safe there. The Bucs go into San Diego. We did mention a couple guys yesterday from San Diego. We talked a lot about Melvin Gordon. We talked a lot about Tyrell Williams. And we actually just mentioned guys like Gates too, just in kind of the avoid nature because and why some of these other wide receivers for San Diego were starting to stand out. So if you want thoughts on that, head back to yesterday's podcast. Rivers is a good quarterback and sort of just the guy that never falls into the top tier for us just because of the price. Anything that we missed on San Diego? And then what do you think about the Bucs? You know, even with a guy like Mike Evans, still a heavy target guy, not matchup proof, but they should be playing from behind here.
Yeah, I mean, I think we keyed in on Dontrell Inman, and I think he's a very good play, especially if Tyrell Williams doesn't wind up playing. I think Mike Evans, you know, the story on him is pretty similar from week to week, which is to say he's one of the highest upside, if not the highest upside wide receiver in the game, thanks to the combination of getting tons of targets and running deep routes and the fact that he's a great red zone target. So those are really, he checks all the boxes when it comes to, you know, big money wide receivers in that perspective. So yeah, he's an excellent play this week.
Yeah. And then you get a guy like Doug Martin, 23 carries and 24 carries over the last 2 weeks in two kind of not so great matchups against Seattle and Kansas City. San Diego is not nearly as good as those two teams are on defense, though they're not bad. They've been a top 10 defense overall this season, ranked 13th against the rush, 9th against the pass. For him, I like the amount of touches he's getting for sure, but this just might just be another one of those not so great matchups, even for a guy that stands to see a decent amount of volume. All right, Redskins take on the Cardinals. Cardinals expected to put up points here, 26 implied points right now, -2.5 favorites against the Redskins. We talked a lot about David Johnson yesterday. I ran a new set of projections coming into this morning. Yesterday we had, I got to look back exactly what new information was pulled in sort of overnight, because this is one of those things where when you have just a million data points, it's hard to sometimes backtrace exactly what happened. But yesterday we had Johnson and Le'Veon Bell sort of as like coin flip territory. And then this morning I looked and now we have Johnson just ranked slightly above him. So again, I need to go back and look. Bell is still very much in contention there. But Johnson, I would say yesterday we were maybe going back and forth a little bit. And now the system is clearly favoring Johnson in this matchup. And I think that he will be maybe a chalk play at running back. After him, you know, a guy like Fitzgerald didn't put up the performance that we wanted last week. I think we did have him, but he's still a heavy target guy. I've heard rumblings that Josh Norman is going to shadow him. It's so funny. They said Josh Norman's going to shadow him at times. Like, what does that even mean? Isn't that like everybody? Like at times he's going to shadow him. So sometimes he'll cover him, sometimes he won't. Isn't like the word shadow, shouldn't that be reserved for like when you're going to be on the whole game? Like, do you find that like a confusing piece of news?
Yeah, I know, like, when I go outside sometimes, my shadow is, like, there sometimes and not there other times. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, it's like my shadow is there sometimes. Like, it's a ridiculously terrible analogy. For sure.
So, I mean, do we get worried about, an elite cover corner being on a guy like Fitzgerald?
I mean, I'm worried about Fitzgerald just generally because the last 2 weeks, like, going down to a guy, like, to minus or to less than 10% target share in back-to-back weeks is just terrible. Like, and it's not like he wasn't on the field too. He played 72 snaps against Minnesota, 64 against Atlanta. It's bad. And I don't know, like, that news, it's bad as well. Like, the fact that he's going to cover Fitzgerald at all is bad. But on top of the fact that he's kind of disappeared the last 2 weeks, I'm kind of off it.
Yeah, on the Redskins side of the ball too, it looks like Jordan Reed is not going to play again this week. He's an elite target tight end when he does play, but what does that do for the Redskins wide receiver core? You know, Vegas has them playing from behind, though not by a ton. Does anyone sort of start jumping up for the Redskins in terms of the passing game, or even like Rob Kelly, who has seen a decent amount of carries for the Redskins of late?
Well, yeah, the guy that jumps up for me is my cousin, Vernon Davis.
Your cousin?
Yeah, he's my cousin. We're related. Like, I actually just got my family tree book from my mom over Thanksgiving. So he's like it's a kind of a distant cousin. So I know about that. I know because everyone is very curious. My parents did a 23andMe. We were like so excited. That's where you can figure out what your heritage is, right? This is important. This is going to be really relevant. We'll all tie back in a second. But they found out because they were like, people do these tests and like, I wonder if I have like some Mohican in me, you know?
Right.
And they got it back and it was like, you are 99.85% from Scotland or like Wales or wherever. It was like both sides of my parents, like they didn't even tell us about it because they literally had just like no hits that were statistically significant that weren't just like white Europeans basically. So
now you're from here, dude, and that's it. So
yeah, I'm American is what happened there. But anyway, Vernon Davis, my cousin.
There you go.
Yeah, so like a lot of Davises, there's actually no tie-in. I just wanted to share that story, but I think it was worth it. So Vernon Davis.
I'm just wondering how many people are still listening or how many people have just at this point just hit them. I don't know.
See, now they're discouraged because they were really excited about the story and you rained on their parade. But Vernon Davis, he actually is a guy. I mean, we played him early in the season and I think we ran a little hot by just catching a touchdown when he didn't wind up getting the target share that we pictured. But last week, on Thanksgiving rather, he went out there and had a 16% target share. You know, he was a red zone target against Minnesota, caught a touchdown there, 12% target share the week before that against Cincinnati. And this is all with Reed active, right? So I don't know that he's a safe guy, but we've talked about how bad tight end is this week.
Yep.
And I mean, given that we were considering guys like Ben Koyak with no track record at all last week, a guy who's topped 68 yards three times this season, like that's in play, or four times, that's in play for me, right? So I think he definitely moves up the depth chart in terms of the bad tight ends this week and is a strong consideration for me.
All right, next game on the slate is the Giants and the Steelers. Steelers projected for us a little north of 27 points this week. We did talk about it, Le'Veon Bell yesterday. I mentioned him a minute ago as well in relation to Johnson. Do we see that Bell and Brown combination as just, is that like the safest wide receiver running back pairing that you can kind of put together in cash games, considering they're just almost everything of what their team does?
I think so. I mean, Bell, obviously, I think he's in a league of his own might be a little bit of a strong thing just because David Johnson's been so good this year too. But just his combination of carries and receptions means that he's just totally immune to a bad game script. And that's so unusual for running backs. I think he's an easy one. Brown too. I mean, Brown gets targets on a level that, you know, last year there was kind of a cluster of guys that were in the same group. Brown has kind of separated himself from them by and large, although of course the last 2 weeks he's been getting fewer targets than he had been prior to that. Either way, yeah, both are incredible. I don't know if Brown is going to be where I'm going to wind up this week. We just got to note that Janoris Jenkins is going to shadow Brown in week 13, and that's not ideal for him. Jenkins did shut down Bryant, Diggs. He shut down AJ Green by and large. So I don't think that's a good sign necessarily, but Brown is one of the, if anyone's matchup proof at the wide receiver position, it's him. So I think you could still consider him for sure.
Yeah, the last thing piece on like Bell versus Johnson, if you're kind of going back and forth about it, I mean, one way you can, you think they're very much the same, Bell is 300 less than Johnson on DraftKings, but 100 more on FanDuel. So if you just want to get like a little piece of savings going one way or the other, just you can play multiple sites and just kind of play the cheaper of the two guys. Because, you know, look, 100, people will poo-poo that and say $100. It matters. Like these things, these pricing is pretty tight for all things considered on these sites. $100 here or there, $300 on DraftKings, it definitely matters. So if you're at all on the fence about these two guys and you're just looking for anything to sort of break the tie, I would say play both sites and just play the cheaper guy on either one. On the Giants side, if you think they're playing from behind, can you stomach a guy like Odell Beckham here? Again, obviously an elite guy. I'm not sure he falls into the total elite target share as guys like Brown and even Jones or Mike Evans, but the talent is on par. What do you think about Beckham?
Yeah, it's an upside play. I don't think that's where you want to be at all in terms of big money for cash games this week, just because the performance has been somewhat erratic. You know, two of his last five games, he had 7 points against the Bears, 7 points against the Rams in two, which should have been pretty good matchups. And he also has some big weeks too. So he's kind of Mike Evans, right? I mean, he's like a more expensive Mike Evans to me at this point, which is not something I'm super interested in.
Panthers head into Seattle. We talked a lot about, Seattle is a pretty big favorite, -7.5. That's kind of been bet up for them against a struggling Carolina team, at least on offense. We talked a lot about Russell Wilson yesterday in terms of he was a popular play last week, and our system really, really likes him at its price this week. And we think people might, you know, kind of trend away from him because he burns so many people. So we talked about that yesterday. What about Thomas Rawls? Rawls kind of falls into that same camp of people played him and he really wasn't good, but he's the running back one against the Carolina team. What do you think about a guy like Rawls?
I don't have super strong feelings about him just because it's so hard to evaluate his opportunity here. Yeah. You know, just 12 carries against Tampa Bay. And yeah, they were trailing, but it's not like they were getting blown out. So the fact that they didn't want to give him the ball very much in that game is not a very welcome sign for me whatsoever. And it's not like he was really lighting the world on fire prior to that. Like earlier this season, in the first game against Miami and in the LA game after that, it was 19 carries for 25 yards. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of off the Rawls bandwagon.
What about going back the other way? Is there anything to even remotely consider for Carolina going against the Seattle defense? Seattle defense, not the defense of old, but still very good. I mean, top five defense overall in the seasons. Cam struggled. The running game struggled.
They just stink. Yeah. They're a bad offense. I don't know what else to say about it. Like, no offense, guys, if you're listening, your offense stinks. I'm not going to play any of you this week.
The last game on the slate is the Monday night game, the Colts and the Jets. Looks like Andrew Luck is going to be back for this game. It's not on the main slate. These games always fall sort of into no man's land in terms of DFS because the sites obviously have concentrated only the Sunday games on the main slate. I mean, give me a quick hit on this game because it just doesn't really fall into it doesn't fall into so much fantasy relevance just because, I don't know, it's sort of, these Monday night games tend to be afterthoughts.
Well, you got to be a real masochist to play the Sunday night into Monday slate, like with Carolina, Seattle, right, into Jets, Colts. Like, that's just, I've been there, buddies. You know, if you're sitting there, mm-hmm, and you're stuck because, you know, your running back got hurt and it's 8 o'clock and you're thinking about putting in these Sunday into Monday night games, I feel for you. It's not going to be a decision I'm going to make personally, probably, because this game in particular is just so unexciting. Like, there's not a single guy on the Colts you can really trust. People stuck their necks out there with Hilton and got burned for it. I don't like it. I don't know what else to say. The Jets are up and down, simply terrible on offense. The Colts are nothing super this season either, and the Jets are a solid defense. So maybe you play Andrew Luck if you're in the Sunday Monday slate.
Yeah, system likes Luck at his price. Actually, he'd be a guy we'd be talking about a lot more, I think, if they were on the main slate. So, but just,
yeah, no doubt about it. But again, like in a Sunday and a Monday slate, like Wilson's a good play too. I don't know if you're really getting away with anything there. So, yeah, I'm kind of off it.
All right, that's it for us today. Breaking down every game, the DFS implications of Week 13, every single game on the slate. You can check us out at dailyfantasysportsrankings.com. You can check out our main picks. You can check out our stacks article, our news and NFL updates, injury updates that are going up over the course of the weekend. You're all set there, and you can also grab that free 3-day subscription to our pro package, which includes optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Free for 3 days, and then $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, enjoy the weekend of football. I'll talk to you again next week, and yeah, that's it for us today.
Yeah.